Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. And this morning is Sunday, December 15th, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thank you all for joining us. We'll start this morning with our morning prayer.
On page 147 of Miscellany. May this little sanctum be preserved sacred to the memory of this pure purpose and subserve it. Let the Bible and the Christian Science textbook preach the gospel which leads, heals the sick, and enlightens the people's sense of Christian Science. This ministry reaching the physical, moral, and spiritual needs of humanity will, in the name of Almighty God, speak the truth that today, as in olden time, is found able to heal both sin and disease. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. And the watching point.
Watch number 61. Watch that you free your treatment from all limitation by realizing that it is the word of God that goeth forth to do his will, that it is omnipotence, and in no way limited in its effect by being put forth by yourself, one who appears still to be a sinful mortal. Realize that the moment it leaves you, it is in God's care, and its effect is instant and successful. Mrs. Eddy once declared, quote, "My treatment is not afraid. A Christian Science treatment dissipates all the supposititious presence, power, and law of fear. Treat to know with each treatment. This treatment is effectual, a good treatment, and nothing can reverse it." End quote.
Thank you. Comments on that?
I just really found that very helpful because I think it releases it from self. I know that sometimes I forget to do that. And I just think that's something important we have to remember.
Thank you. Linda?
That was about the same thing. I was grateful she put it in here.
This is about one of the most important things you can know about your treatment. And if you don't know this, you've really not given a treatment.
I think it's almost like the getting in God's power that we have to do for watches as well. I don't see any difference there. I mean, without that power present, what is here?
Absolutely. Your watches, everything you do has to start out with this sense, and it is a sense, a feeling of God's omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience. It can't just be words. You've got to feel it. And you feel it. How do you feel it?
With your heart?
Yes, your heart. And how does that feeling, how do you come by that feeling?
Quiet and knowing.
What'd you say, Linda?
For me, it would be like living it out through the day and facing down some of the negativity and things that I would try to take in.
That's exactly right. You can't conjure it up at the last minute. You have to be living it during the day. And if you come upon things that you say, oh, wow, look at that. That has power. That evil has power. Look what's going on in the news. That has power. Look at this horrible stuff that's going on. That has power. Then you can't do a watch or a treatment effectively. You've got to be knocking it down day after day, moment by moment in your daily living. This is what Parthen speaks to in his forum about the model in thought. You hold the right model in thought all the time. And if whatever you are viewing does not live up to that model, then you work till you do you know in your heart that model exists and is the right one? And if you do it consistently, the wrong model will dissipate. It'll disappear into its native nothingness because it's an illusion, an aggressive mental suggestion. And maybe many people are believing it, but that doesn't mean it's true. Florence?
Yeah, it's like it reminded me of that article, Demonstration. I think the author is unknown, who said that I have found the secret, you know, to pause every so often during the day to know that there's only perfection. I think that brings the power of God's onlyness, you know, that He is all, there's nothing else. I think it helps to culture that kind of thinking.
Thank you.
I like what Ms. said to a man who, she asked him if he was praying, I believe. And she said, he said he was. And she said, well, when you see leaves on the ground, do you declare there's no death? Do you, when you see somebody who is ill, do you declare there is no sickness? That helps me.
Thank you very much. That's right. That's being a minute man and woman. Is that Michael?
Yes. Hello?
Are you speaking?
Yes. I just had one suggestion that somebody gave me once was something they said to me was that the same power that split the Red Sea for Moses and raised Lazarus from the dead, that same power is here now. And that's what's being used or invoked when you do a treatment. And it hasn't changed. Time has nothing to do with it. And it's that same exact omnipresent God that is doing the work, whatever that treatment may be.
That's beautiful. I know. I think the Christians call it the resurrection power, that same power that raised Jesus is with us here now. And we as scientists should know that. And if we don't, we better get working where we do. And the only way you can do it is in living it. It's not something you conjure up. You live it. You prove it. And if you go around believing that there's evil is a power, then you're not living it. And it, I don't care what form it tries to trick you. I thought it was beautiful. I guess it was Parthen's last paragraph. Well, in his forum, he says, any thought that I think long enough eventually becomes a belief. As I continue holding to this belief, it will surely gather more thoughts like unto itself. And that belief will eventually reproduce itself on a larger scale in my life experience, whether it's true or false, godly or ungodly. That's why Mrs. Eddy says, Adam, where art thou?
That's feeding the era too.
Yes. And then he ends it. The more perfect idea held constantly before the people's mind, and this is Mrs. Eddy, must have a benign and elevating influence upon the character of nations as well as individuals, and will lift man ultimately to the understanding that our ideals form our characters, that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. People's Idea of Good, page 2. Our founding fathers fixed their gaze upon the more perfect idea, and this is why we must watch and pray for our country's leaders and the mass media, that they may hold constantly before the people's mind, end quote, the perfect model of a free nation, a nation governed by the Spirit of God. For where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. 2 Corinthians. That is our job, holding that perfect model in thought and not believing the false. And I believe what Florence quoted, we once called, it's an article, and we once called it, was called The Secret. It has been attributed to Mrs. Eddy, although my feeling is she did not write it, but I'm not sure who we have it listed by at this point, but it's about seeing things properly. And so now we were going to get into this lesson, a very well-constructed one by Elizabeth, on God the Preserver of Man. Our golden text, Matthew 5. Jeffrey?
Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
Thank you. And then, Lillian, you can read the responsive readings. Three, four, five, and six.
Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who shall stand in his holy place? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully. He shall receive the blessing from the Lord, and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is the generation of them that seek him, that seek thy face, O Jacob.
Thank you. So what word was very prevalent in this lesson?
Purity. Purity.
Thank you. Purity. And we are going to get into this because everything is at stake. The Beatitude, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Noah was pure, wasn't he? He found grace in the eyes of the Lord. He was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. He was, as Lil just read in the responsive reading, pure. And because he was pure, what did that enable him to do and also to see?
He could hear God's warning.
He could hear God's warning.
And he obeyed him.
Take his instructions.
Yes.
Yeah, because what constitutes purity? What does it mean to be pure?
We're going to get into that. So that's a broad question. I'd rather talk about Noah for the moment. That's a very broad question we'll get into. But and what did the people around him think?
He was crazy.
Yes.
Made fun of him.
That he was crazy.
But none of us have ever had that experience.
Yes, none of us have ever had that experience. So his purity enabled him. You see, purity of thought doesn't just allow you to see the good, the enduring, the good and the true, as Mrs. Eddy says. Holding thought steadfastly to that, you will bring it into your experience, science and health, in proportion to your thinking. It's a paraphrase, but it also allows you to see what's wrong very clearly. And not in a critical way. It just comes. Just comes. And only to heal and bless. And Mrs. Eddy lays that out very specifically in her chapter on spiritualism, which you should all be very familiar with. Because this is not clairvoyance. This is a God-given thing, and it's very different from this mortal mind reading that some people pride themselves in doing. So, okay. Linda, you gave us some definitions.
Well, from the Webster's 1828 dictionary, first pure, genuine, real, true, incorrupt, unadulterated, free from moral defilement. Definition of defilement was corruption of morals, principles, or character. And then for corrupt, to change from good to bad, to deprave the heart, mind, will, understanding, taste, principles, etc.
Thank you. Any comments on any of that so far? What is the first statement in Science and Health, Carol?
To those leaning on the
system. No, I'm sorry, in the lesson citation. Oh. Science and health.
Security for the claims of harmonious and eternal being is found only in divine science.
Do you know how much people want to be secure these days? You see it everywhere, people seeking security. And now you see we are in a different kind of war that's going on, where it's these terrorism attacks happening here, there, and everywhere. How do you find your security? Where are you safe? You hear people talking.
In God.
It's not in only in God and your understanding. Now, Noah, because of his purity, he knew that a flood was coming. The only way he possibly could have known that was through God. And because of that, he built an ark, even though people were laughing at him, and saved what? Everything that was worth saving was saved. Now, the thing that gets me, that I find so interesting, is Christian Science has the answer to every single problem. Every problem, whether it's health, security, relationship problems, whatever it is. And if you would devote as much time as you do with other things on this science, you would have all the answers, every answer in Christian Science, in Science and Health, in Prose Works, and in our Bible. So the question is about purity, what it is, as Gary was asking. And Linda quoted from, it's really an article by Spurgeon on this commandment. I have a little book called The Beatitudes, which has all his writings on the Beatitudes, and it is beautiful. Some of it we have discussed in Bible study, but we're going to get into it again, because Spurgeon had a very clear thought on all of this, and most important,
he's never afraid to rebuke. He does. I think that probably,
well, that's right. He did not try to be
tickle their ears or make
right them. Nice. He spoke very, very plainly
in all his sermons.
yes. So,
like Amos.
Like Amos, yes. One of the things he says about impurity of heart causes spiritual blindness. A man who is intoxicated cannot see clearly. His vision is often distorted or troubled. So when you are impure, you're gonna see everything wrong, because you're gonna objectify your own impurity on other people, on the world itself. You will not understand clearly what's going on in our nation government. You won't understand a lot of things because your heart is not pure. Purity gives you the ability to judge righteous judgment, not to judge people, but to, again, understand what's going on, what needs healing and what doesn't. And then to hold the right model in thought till you see it made manifest. He said there are unseen beauties and horrors. There are moral beauties and immoral horrors that those who are impure cannot see. Is that not true? So much beauty in this world. Everywhere you go, you see it. And yet, there are immoral horrors that people seem totally blind to. One thing he brings out in this article, he says people that don't like the Bible, that's because there's something in them that's being rebuked. So yeah, they're going to fight against it. Now, I don't want to hear that. I don't want my kingdom of materialism to be knocked over. But if you're pure in heart, the Bible will be amazing as we are studying in our Bible studies. It'll just open up and illuminate everything and definitely apply to right now, right here. And even if a chapter like, or excuse me, a book like Moses could have such meaning, well, then they all do, as I'm sure Tom will continue to show us.
You mean Amos?
I'm sorry, what did I say?
Moses.
Oh, sorry. Amos. A book like Amos, which seems all, you know, fire and brimstone. And it is fire and brimstone. But a little of that is good. It stirs the soul.
The muddy riverbed needs to be stirred.
Yes. And Spurgeon says, you know, materiality, viewing everything with money in mind or greed will make you impure. He says there are innumerable things that a man cannot see if he holds a gold coin over each of his eyes. He cannot even see them. And if he keeps the gold over his eyes, he will become blind. The pure in heart can see, but when covetousness gets into the heart, it makes the eyes dim or blind. We go over and over and over the sin of covetousness. You can't see when you're comparing yourself to others or measuring yourself to what others are doing or jealous of what they are done or envious of what they have. And when you really want what they have, you've dangerously crossed the line. And your purity is gone. And you're blinded. The pure in heart sees righteous judgment, as I said. If someone has come by whatever it is good they have in their life, how should you feel about it?
Grateful for them and know that it's possible for anyone.
Yes. And when you have something good in your life come, you know always, thank you, God, for this, and I know it is possible for everyone. Therefore, no one can envy what I have. That's something we were taught here to do, especially if you get like a new car or something like that, because Mrs. Evans once told the story. She had a brand new car. She was so excited about it, and, you know, she went out and dinged it. And her practitioner, Nana Ritchie, at that time, told her this lesson. You thank God for it, and then you know everyone else is satisfied and happy, and what's available to you is available to all people. This is the prayer unceasing. And this is having your feelers up. You have to be very careful. This is a very subtle arrow that comes over people. And very important that it doesn't enter your thought or your experience. And this is how. And then he talks about another sin, the sin of oppression. And there are people who think that oppressing other people, whether it's a husband oppressing a wife or a wife oppressing a husband or a government oppressing other people or slavery, or there's all kinds of oppression. How could you possibly think that's right? And remain pure. And you're better than someone else and you have the right to control or boss them in any way. You will lose your purity right away if you think that. And if you were born into homes that do this or think that, then you have to wash yourself clean of it. We are all equal in God's sight, aren't we? No one should ever oppress another. Church should not oppress anyone, that's for sure. And then he mentions this. When men speak against the gospel, it is almost always because the gospel speaks against them. That's to make a good calendar sign. He also speaks about, well, as if his lasciviousness.
Lasciviousness.
Lasciviousness. I'm great at pronouncing these words.
The word's too big.
And what is that?
Being neat and orderly?
No.
It's a perverted lustfulness.
Perverted lustfulness. Lasciviousness.
Which is a redundancy.
Well, and that's in the list of the carnal mind properties, so-called. And you see, again, today, all of this that's available on internet. I was reading where there are some lawmakers who are talking to our attorney general about prohibiting, it was called obscene pornography. And all of this was involving children. Now, how can you indulge in this and have a pure heart? Please explain to me. Just because you think you're doing it in secret. So you want to do this, go ahead and do it. All right, do it. And then you will suffer the consequences. You will not be secure, okay? And anything could happen to you at any time. You forfeit your purity, you forfeit your ability to hear God, and you will suffer those consequences. And this is what happens over and over and over again. We see it, we hear it. This is what's happening.
And this is divine love in operation. When someone suffers for having a mistaken view of what life really is, that's divine love saying, wake up. You are causing your own suffering.
You are causing your own suffering, and you are losing your purity, which is actually a God-given property, isn't it? Because look at children. Isn't that one thing we say about them? They're so pure and innocent. And a thought that would prey on an innocent child in a lustful way is unconscionable. Moral idiocy. And yeah, you do it, but there's a huge, huge price to pay for it. In the lesson, it is the spiritualization of thought and Christianization of daily life in contrast with the results of the ghastly farce of material existence. It is chastity and purity in contrast with the downward tendency and earthward gravitation of sensualism and impurity, which really attests the divine origin and operation of Christian Science. The triumphs of Christian Science are recorded in the destruction of error and evil, from which are propagated the dismal beliefs of sin, sickness, and death. In living in disobedience to Him, we ought to feel no security, although God is good. You want to live in disobedience to Him? Then forget all the blessings and don't even ask for them, okay? Just accept the fact you want to do this, but don't try to hide it and then ask God, please do this, that, or the next thing. You kind of have a repentance, a change of heart, and then come to the altar.
And when your suffering becomes unsufferable, don't blame God for your suffering, because God is good, and you just decided not to accept it. You've decided to worship something else.
And believe me, it doesn't matter what you think you're doing in secret, because God knows everything, doesn't He? You think you're doing something in secret, it's not secret. Probably your fellow man knows it too. And then he says, regarding spiritual as well as moral truth, we frequently meet with persons who say they cannot understand the gospel of Christ. Behind this, in 9 cases out of 10, I believe that it is their sin that prevents their understanding it. If anyone talks like that, it is because his heart is not right in the sight of God. For if it were, he would be able to judge righteously. He would see that the highest claims in all the world are those of the Creator upon his creatures. You see, that's why the Pharisees couldn't see Jesus, right? Their sins blinded them. So, and then he talks about the intellectuals, I call them that. He said even some Christians never see God. And I mean some believers who from their peculiar constitution seem naturally of a questioning spirit. They're always generally puzzled about some doctrinal point or another, and their time is mostly taken up with answering objections and removing doubts. They're always saying, well, I don't understand this, or instead of just living it day by day and proving what you do know, well, what do you mean? How do you do this? Oh, my. And then he says, perhaps some poor, humble countrywoman who sits in the aisle and knows, as Cowper says, nothing more than that her Bible is true and that God always keeps his promises, sees a great deal more of God than the learned and quibbling brother who vexes himself about foolish questions to no profit.
Very true.
In the practice, do we ever see that?
And Mrs. Eddy refers to that as the human mind, and she calls it an enigma. What is an enigma?
Something you can't explain.
It's a problem without a solution, and that is what the human mind is. That's why you see so many people who are in the human mind are always questioning, are always having problems that they can't figure out.
And they're generally miserable.
And some of them are proud of their misery.
Yeah, who was telling us? Someone was telling us, you know, I forget who that was, saying some people just enjoy being unhappy. Those are the people you don't want to spend a lot of time with.
That was one of the interviews in the documentary we saw called yeah. No Safe
Spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, you want to be safe? Got all these campuses now with safe, quote, safe spaces. Mm-hmm. They're not safe because there's no God there.
Yes, there's no God there. This person said, he was a young Jewish man walking in the campuses of Columbia University where he went, and he said they were teaching him the worst drivel he ever heard, and he knew it was drivel. And he said he had a revelation because Psalm 111, there's the verse, in the fear of the Lord, there is wisdom. And he realized that the college campuses that teach knowledge and knowledge and knowledge and are so proud and intellectual about it, when there is no wisdom, it is godless. And he realized that that's what was wrong. You cannot take God out of the equation, ever.
And expect to get a right answer.
And because he had studied as a Hebrew boy, he'd studied the Bible, he knew these facts, and he could go to this, Ivy League, wonderful institution, and see through it, because he was pure in heart. He saw what others did not see because of his purity, because he had a God sense. So you see, this isn't just about for Christian Scientists. This is about anyone who loves the Lord thy God with their heart, mind, soul. It gave him a vision, a clarity. It's very interesting because I certainly have felt this for a long time, and it was definitely what Mrs. Evans taught. And it's what the Apostle Paul said about all his so-called learning and knowledge. What did he call it? Gary's favorite quote from the Bible.
G-U-N-G.
Consider it all dung. You can teach knowledge all you want, but if it has no God in it, no wisdom in it, it is worse than useless. And yet people pride themselves on their knowledge, unfortunately. And unfortunately, it blocks their purity and their ability to see clearly. Okay, so then I think I covered all the things he was saying that would block your purity. But then he says, okay, so how do you get a pure heart? Is it by baptism? Is it by going to church every week? Is it by giving testimonies? How does one get... Go ahead.
As I was thinking about this week, because I asked myself the same question, what came to me was obedience to God, love for God, just giving God all the glory and not, but it was my love and obedience to God was definitely a beginning.
Thank you. Yes. Anybody else?
By living the nearest right you know how and listening.
Thank you.
And loving your fellow man.
Yes.
Rebuke error.
Definitely. Rebuking error.
Pure desires.
Yeah. You know, that's in the rule for motives and acts.
Humility.
Well, definitely, yes. Always purify your motives. When you want to do something, make sure you ask why. Is it for your glory or for the glory of God? And yes, that takes humility.
I was thinking about Carpenter talked about Mrs. Eddy, that she would get what she felt was God telling her to do something, and then she would expose it to the, I think he called it the light of demonstration, and if it stood fast through that, then she knew that it was truly from God.
That's so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And Spurgeon says, and it's, you all know it's true, purification of the heart is a divine work. You can't do it yourself. Try as you might, and I have. It's a divine work. It's the amazing grace, which my favorite definition, spirit or influence of God operating in man to strengthen and regenerate. And the word regenerate means to implant holy affections in the heart, a virtue of divine origin. We are born with this in us. And sometimes we have to chip away at all the things we've learned, perhaps that aren't in accord with that. But just like that story, you know, another Parthen sent me that story about Michelangelo and doing the statue of David. He just took away everything that wasn't David and came up with David. So we chip away and take away all things that are not us as God sees us, as God sees us, and we come up with our true selves, pure, holy, the reflection of Him. And if you know of someone you love who seems leading an impure path, you can know this truth. The amazing grace of God, the spirit or influence of God operating in him or her. It's operating in him or her. And it's strengthening and it's regenerating. And regenerating means implanting holy affections in the heart, a virtue of divine origin. That is going on.
And in science, we understand that that process of regeneration is really returning to our original state. It's not changing something to something different. As Mary described, it's just chipping away at this crap that isn't true and returning us to our original state. That's why it's so universal. That's why it's possible for everyone.
And everyone is doing it. I read a story recently, someone growing up in the ghettos and, you know, every disadvantage and living a life of drugs and other things. And then it came upon him that it was what he thought, that he was not a victim. And I forget, they were inspired. He had some model, I forget who it was, but somebody who brought himself out of that. And he realized he's not a victim. He doesn't have to blame everybody for his circumstances or blame his history, blame his past. That's just going to agitate and keep you in a position. Instead, he realized it was his mental outlook. And once he started doing that and began to have a positive mental outlook and to think, love his fellow man and follow biblical principles, he was raised up out of that situation. And so it is, and it's happened over and over and over. Those are the stories that should get more publicity. Thinking you're a victim is not helpful. Thinking there's someone else to blame or someone else will fix your problems. Where is God? That is a godless attitude. So you see, as you follow these things, watch your thought, keep yourself pure the best that you can, then you will have security and it will be found in divine science and you won't be in the wrong place at the wrong time doing the wrong thing. God wouldn't allow that. And you'll find better health, peace, joy, all good things, every answer to every problem. But it requires something of you. And as is said, this is a pearl of great price. Mrs. Eddy says this. Shouldn't it require something of you?
Nothing for nothing.
That's it.
Well, every other good thing we strive for requires us to work for it. So why wouldn't this?
Yes. Yes. And this is the most important thing there is. So start looking at the time you spend and how much time you do spend in prayer and giving thanks and gratitude. Not that we sit in our prayer chair all day. That's not the point. But Mrs. Eddy says 4 hours a day.
And it's not complicated. All of this is contained in the three daily duties that Mrs. Eddy has given us in the manual. You don't have to look very far to find the instructions to do this.
No, and it doesn't, if we just do, as Karen said earlier, just be obedient to this truth and love God, your affections will be purified. You will become more and more pure and you will see more clearly. And when you make a mistake, red flags are going to go, you know, horns will beep, everything will, this says, I don't feel quite right about any of this. Listen to that. Don't ignore it. If you don't feel right, you don't want to go to a Christmas party, for God's sakes, don't go. You don't even have to know why. Just don't do it. Listen to that voice. Starts out the still small voice, but pretty soon it can get to be a roaring voice when you don't obey it. It'll keep you secure, all good things. It's always talking to you. It's the greatest gift we've been given.
And it'll never guide you incorrectly. You can count on that. Mrs. Eddy says, man's spiritual sense is never wrong.
Yes.
So you have every reason in the world to obey it when you hear it.
And as the lesson says in the Bible, in Job, and thou shalt be secure, because there is hope. Yea, thou shalt dig about thee, and thou shalt take thy rest in safety. Now, Wendy sent us a box of books recently, and there was one very interesting one called The Demise of Pleasant View, Home of Mary Baker Eddy from 1892 to 1908. It's found on, you can get it, we have keep a copy in church, you can get it on Amazon. It's by a Christine Anderson. I've always wondered what in the heck happened to Pleasant View. And she explains it all through newspaper articles. And there are some major facts about it. And one, that in 1917, it was totally burned down by the board of directors. In her will, she gave provision that it be sold. And it also brings out very strongly that when she moved to Chestnut Hill, and this is something I didn't know, she always had planned to go back to Pleasant View. They were going to remodel it. They were going to, you know, do some things. She left her original furniture there. She always planned that she would go back there. That was the home she loved. And what did she say? She said if she was ever taken from there, at one time Mary Baker Eddy told a faithful worker in her home that if she were to ever leave Pleasant View, it would be that she was to be delivered up to her enemies. And we have visited Chestnut Hill a few times, and it is certainly the sense that I get walking in the halls there. And a lot of the men and they had been considered good workers. Some of them were on the board of directors. Did you find the list of who were on the board of directors during the great litigation? Which means they voted for the wrong cause. And I know William Rathbone was one of them. Adam Dickey was one of them. Annie Knott was one of them. And Linda's to find out the others. Because generally, we do not publish their works. They did some good things. And I know God's Law of Adjustment and other things were good. But and that we can be grateful for the good they did. But the fact that they got murky.
James O'Neill was another one. And then there's one other.
Yeah, we need to have that list because in our calendar submissions, Clifford Smith. Well, we have a list of people that we don't quote from. Again, we have to be wise, and this is a very, I would say, it's a very important book that you all own to see what happened. And you know, then they built a home for old people or an insane asylum on the spot where she lived. What kind of, you know, the connection between her and that. I mean, you can't tell me that there wasn't something very wicked behind this. And I will go back to this beautiful quote that I love in The Destiny of the Mother Church by Liz Knapp. Quote, early in December 1851, she herself, Mrs. Eddy, was led to a beautiful tract of land on the outskirts of Concord, which she purchased. She named her home Pleasant View, and in writing to Mr. Knapp about it, she said she had longed for a home by the seaside, but instead God prepared it on a hillside. And she wrote, quote, my house here stands upon a very sightly hill, and the sides remind me of the Galilean slopes where my brother walked and wept and prayed. That home meant so much to her. You know the quote where she says, other than God, my greatest love was that of home. And to think that she was intending to go back, but she was taken up to her enemies. And it also says in here that...
And what was her enemy?
The human mind.
The human mind. We're not talking about people here. We're talking about the resistance of the human mind to the truth.
Which is always about. And this quote, which said, well, the Boston directors also hold various written orders and directions which were prepared by Mrs. Eddy during the last days of her life in the hope of safeguarding the future movement of Christian Science. In this issue of The Watchman, and according to Gary, The Watchman were...
It's a periodical.
It's a periodical of people who were excommunicated, I believe. Anyway, only one of these documents will be specifically considered. It relates to one of the most unscientific and disastrous enterprises ever perpetuated in the name of Christian Science. The old age home built upon the grounds at Pleasant View, where Mrs. Eddy most largely developed her great world system for overcoming of sickness, old age, and death. And then it says this, 14 days before her decease, a time when she recognized that physical dissolution was imminent, and when she saw that a decadent church would again attempt to substitute institutionalism for scientific Christianity, she wrote with her own hand an order prohibiting the use of real estate property owned by her for any other purposes than those for which they were now being used, unless she gave her handwritten consent. Another estoppel clause here. Despite Mrs. Eddy's specific orders, the Boston directors, in willful disobedience, demolished her historic residence and built an old age home on its site. And they actually burned it, which is a very strange thing to do.
Which was documented in articles in the local papers.
It was. The fire, you know, the fire police, everybody had to come. It's all documented in these articles. The truth cannot be hidden for the people. We need to know these things, and we need to preserve what she did, her identity, and to clearly see. And the only way we can clearly see is to be pure within ourselves. Otherwise, it's all murky, and we wouldn't believe it, even if we tripped over it. Okay, we're going to end today with Mrs. Eddy, The New Birth.
The purification or baptismals that come from spirit develop step by step the original likeness of perfect man and efface the mark of the beast. Quote, whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. End quote. Therefore, rejoice in tribulation and welcome these spiritual signs of the new birth under the law and gospel of Christ truth. Between the centripetal and centrifugal mental forces of material and spiritual gravitations, we go into or we go out of materialism or sin and choose our course and its results. Which then shall be our choice? The sinful, material, and perishable, or the spiritual, joy-giving, and eternal? The spiritual sense of life and its grand pursuits is of itself a bliss, health-giving and joy-inspiring. This sense of life illumines our pathway with the radiance of divine love, heals man spontaneously, morally and physically, exhaling the aroma of Jesus' own words, quote, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, end quote.
Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.